Hello, everyone, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap. It is February the 8th of 2017.
Post-Super Bowl Sunday, Nick.
Yeah. So there was quite a bit of a freak-out about that game, wasn't there?
I don't know what you're saying, Nick. I stopped watching the game in the third quarter to show my brother the XFL 30 for 30 documentary.
Because it was clear that the result of the game was no longer
in question. It was already
decided. No team in history had ever come back from such a deficit, so clearly we knew who had won the game.
It was already decided. But I even though I missed easily the most exciting portion of what will undoubtedly go down as one of the most exciting Super Bowls of all time, because you certainly...
I don't know if I would describe it that way.
Well, one of the most notable Super Bowls of all time, we'll put it that way. I do not regret it, because if you have not got a chance to see it, the 30 for 30...
The XFL one
is...
This was the XFL.
...is insanely well done. It's so baffling. If you don't know what the XFL is, for a brief window in time, Vince McMahon and Dick Ebersol basically worked together to put out the XFL, which was going to be an alternative to the NFL that had a bunch of like extreme rules, like no fair catches. I forgot this was even a thing. There was no coin flip to start games. They just put a ball 35 yards away from each other. And they mentioned it.
And on the first week, a guy got injured. They mentioned the scramble, not even a regular play. Yeah.
Yeah. They mentioned so many people got hurt of that thing. It's really, really interesting to just watch it, but it ends at like the best, because it's also one of the few times you're going to see Vince McMahon candid at all. He's generally a pretty private person about that sort of stuff, particularly his failures. But
yeah.
What's really interesting is hearing him discuss how this thing kind of like fell apart. But more than that, hearing him throughout the entire process talk about how much he wanted to beat the shit out of Bob Costas, but he couldn't because Bob Costas was so small. it's such a crazy documentary. You have to watch it, if only to watch the bizarre ending to it, which is basically like a Marvel post-credit scene that suggests that Vince McMahon and Dick Ebersol are going to
team coming back.
they're like, you know, would you ever think about what it'd be like to do it all again? Like, well, maybe you know, Jerry Jones is the kind of owner who'd be into something like that. Maybe we'll. And then they like toast to each other with these giant wine glasses as like the end of the movie messages pop up about what these guys have done with their lives since then. It's like,
Vince McMahon, same.
Yeah, Vince McMahon conquered the last of his competition and now reigns supreme. It's just like, what am I watching? Are these supervillains now?
Why did he want to beat up Bob Costas?
Because he hates Bob Costas. There was an interview between the two of them. He already kind of hit on Bob Costas hit on him at one point, I think, during the steroids scandal.
Oh, okay.
But then later also, during the XFL, held an interview with him that got very heated. Like, if nothing else, at least check that out, because it is insanely awkward, as Vince basically just gets rope-a-doped in this interview into getting, like, he's like red in the face screaming at him, like, I will talk when you talk! Stop talking and I'll answer the question, god damn it! It's like, oh my god. And this is like early 2000s Vince, too. It's great.
When he's, you know, evil Mr. McMahon on WWF television. Yeah. I mean, even, like, that is a story that deserves coverage. It's such a weird thing that this guy who was, you know, at the height of his success decided to go on this bizarre endeavor. The type of side endeavor that he had failed at multiple times before. There are all sorts of side projects that Vince McMahon has tried to do. People have the theory that he's actually ashamed to be the wrestling guy and he wants to be successful for other stuff. But yeah, like WWF New York, where they had the restaurant that failed. He tried to make a bodybuilding organization, which failed. And then it's like, I know who we could take on, the NFL, who were not experiencing bad business at the time, I should know.
No, the only reason it basically exists because he thought He was like, grr, the NFL, it's the no fun league. You want players with crazy personalities who get to name themselves and are encouraged to date the cheerleaders so that we can then interview them with bald interviews the next day asking if they had sex the night before. And then
it's not as though the NFL had quite developed a reputation for doing that anyway. This was before they banned all the celebrations and stuff.
Yeah, this was, 15, 16 years ago, essentially? Yeah. This was not the NFL of today.
This was... Or, you know, like Terrell Owens and Chad Ochocinco and all of them decided that they needed to have a props for every single touchdown celebration. And they were like, no, you spike the ball and do a little jig for like 10 seconds most, and that's it.
I think this was before, I think wedges were still legal in the NFL. Like, you could still run down on a kickoff return with three teammates in a wedge formation.
So oh, yeah, that's this, true.
This was far before the point where NFL started, like, cutting rules for safety and then other such things. It's just, man, yeah, you have to watch it. It's a glorious train fire, but at the same time, actually, like, goes to highlight all the stuff that the XFL did that's actually now part of the actual game that we don't consider. Like, I didn't realize they were the first people to use sky cams.
Yeah, they really changed the production side of it, and that's, you know, that, you know, WWE influence there is that they wanted to make it a really different experience watching it, and the NFL looked at it and were like, wow, this game is crap, but the presentation...
they're like, you know, we're not going to take in breaking into cheerleader interviews.
Player introductions were a thing that the XFL started off with. Uh-huh. So, I mean, yeah.
Mic'd up players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We should probably talk about manga now, I guess, because people are already like, stop
it!
We
don't have Aishel 21. We don't have Aishel 21, I swear. This is not a lead-in to that.
It'd be a great lead-in. I'd be like, holy shit, I didn't even read it, but I know I can talk about a lot of it from heart.
We do have a jump start to get into. We're starting off our train of jump starts that we're going to be getting over the next couple of months, which I'm looking forward to seeing all the new manga that's going to be on display. But let's start things off like we normally do as we kick off the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap by talking about My Hero Academia, which I admit I did not actually read until about 5 minutes before we started recording.
Wow.
I completely forgot. I skipped over it, I guess.
I only say it because I was like, you missed a pretty important chapter.
It's a pretty important goddamn chapter. I'm glad that I realized that I had not read it, and it was like, wait a minute, I should actually read this. I managed to read, like, everything else, and I just somehow skipped over that.
Nick's
I read
like,
freaking Ruby, however much actually happened in that shit.
Nick's like, I read Ruby 7 times. I feel like I'm forgetting
the time
something.
It would have taken me to read My Hero Academia once. My Hero Academia, it is chapter 125. I don't know if we actually get a chapter title on this one. Is it
Overhaul.
The beginning?
Overhaul.
Overhaul, yeah, there it is. Which is about the villain Overhaul, of course, with his Holocaust masks. I still can't believe I made that mistake. His plague doctor mask. He has, of course, been brought into the Villain Alliance's hideout. Kind of flashback, where we actually see Twice leading him into it. I'm not really sure why we get to see that moment, honestly. I don't think it really establishes anything. Well, Twice says it's a rendezvous point. That's really all that gets established. But they could have said that the actual meeting itself. Overhaul is there, and he's talking with everybody, and they make a note that Overhaul is Yakuza, head of the Shie Hasaikai. And there's a bit of world building because what's his name? Hang on a second. What's his villain name? Compress, Mr. Compress. He gives a bit of history lesson to Toga, saying that, oh yeah, the underworld used to be controlled by all these big scary organizations, but when heroes came about, the groups were exposed and dissipated, and so they're kind of like an endangered species now. So the fact that this guy is here is really special. And that's something that I like is like, oh yeah, the idea of organized crime is kind of just gone now because you can't really pull that off with a billion superheroes who would, you know, track you down and stop you.
I've never understood how that's, like, a thing in the Batman universe, how, like, he has, like, a dude...
I'm gonna stop all the major crimes.
I'm like, well, it's like, I understand at the start, but then eventually it reaches the point where it's like, all right, well, my rogues gallery is, like, a guy with the freeze gun, this man who pumps himself full of strength-inducing toxins, a literal monster of clay who can morph into anything he wants, but I've gotta stop Mr. Falcone, the crime lord. I was like, the dude... How is this guy still a thing?
I mean, that was kind of the point of the Dark Knight trilogy, was that, you know, they basically stopped organized crime until Joker came along. Mm. And it sort of makes sense whenever you see, you know, whenever you see a lot of the stuff in Batman, that kind of thing, the gangs are ones that belong to supervillains. So it makes sense. You know, you have the guy who can sort of give you a chance if Batman comes knocking. But then you have to consider, but it's also in the same universe as Superman. How are we going to get away with anything?
I was like, there's so many superheroes in this universe. How is organized crime still functioning with just normal dudes?
Mm-hmm. So they start questioning Overhaul what he's up to and why he's come out. And Overhaul says, this isn't actually about All Might. All for One's fall is a way bigger deal. The Emperor of Darkness, who ruled over the entire underworld. The guy was like an urban legend among my generation. The old guard, though, they're always gossiping that he up and died. And then he showed up in the flesh and got locked up in Tartarus. So now, both the light and dark sides are leaderless. So the question is, who's going to step up and lead? And Shirigaki is like, I am.
I think he says it with a little more conviction than that. Like, I am, guys!
The next leader is me!
Let's move your hand in front of your face. No, you don't want that.
The next leader is me! Have you seen me smile? It's really creepy. Shirigaki says, "Is like, you know, I'm gathering forces here. We're expanding our operations, and I'm going to use that to annihilate the Society of Heroes." And Overhaul just says, "Do you have a plan?" Shirigaki's like, "Aren't you here to join us?" And Overhaul replies, "Well, no. Having a goal without a plan just makes you a daydreamer, and daydreams don't make for a good sales pitch. What happens once you've expanded? How are you going to use those people? What's your management strategy for the organization? You had the Hero Killer Stain, the Carnal Murderer Muscular, and Death Row Inmate Moonfish. They're all heavy hitters operating under you, but they got beaten and caught, almost like you don't know how to use them. So you can barely handle the 10 or so wackos you've got already, and you want to recruit more? No point in amassing power you can't control. You need a solid plan to make your goals a reality, and I'm the man with the plan. So no, I didn't come here today hoping to work for you." There's a little interruption to this big monologue he has, because Shirigaki kind of just, you know, says an aside to Twice, like, can you, like, do, like, a vetting process before you can see anything?
He's like, Twice, next time we do this, I'm going to say first question on the interview packet, you are agreeing to work for us, correct? Like, actually, sir, HR requirements ask if there are any disability conditions that make you ineligible for performing this job, but then after that I can do it. He's like, I don't care about your ADA fucking requirements. God damn it. Make sure he doesn't want to usurp my position.
Do you have an arrest record? Yes. Good. Okay. So what Overhaul is here for is not to join Shirigaki, as he said, but instead to try and get him to join him. So Shirigaki's like, get the fuck out of here. And Magnus steps forward and unwraps his big old bar magnet weapon and starts and uses it to draw Overhaul towards him while he starts giving this little speech. Says, the other day I saw a friend of mine. She's a shy one and kind of timid, but she's still my friend, even knowing who I am and what I do. People bound by the change of society always laugh at those who aren't, she told me. You broke free of all that, Ken. I'm afraid I just don't have the courage to do the same. I'm here because I want to live free. We can decide where we belong. And I'm 2 days away from retirement. Overhaul touches his arm as he's drawn in. And he fucking explodes. There's just... It's this ridiculous almost cartoonish panel where you just see a blood splatter over, like, the remains of his arms and his, you know, legs. And, yeah. So he's dead now.
I'm gonna have to assume so, because it's not even like a pop, and you're like, what happened? Like, you can see just blood raining from the ceiling. Like,
uh-huh. It's just all over
him. Exploded.
You see Overhaul kind of rubbing his arm afterwards, and I'm not sure exactly what this implies. It seems to be that there is some sort of an after effect to him, you know, exploding people. Compress jumps forward to take action, and he's like, okay, I've got to compress him and you see him away. But all of a sudden, he goes forward, he realizes that his quirk isn't working. And Overhaul, you know, is like, don't touch me, and he bats Compress away, and his arm explodes off. Actually, it doesn't explode. It looks like he just cuts it off.
I'm not sure. There's a splat again, I think it's the same thing.
Okay, it's the angle that he lands at. It kind of made it look like his arm was landing behind him, but no, that's just his legs and them seeing kind of bend. Shigaraki finally jumps forward and, you know, goes to use his disintegration ability, and Overhaul reacts to this with surprise, and then he shouts out shield and appears in front of him. He's also wearing a plague doctor mask, and he disintegrates and dies. We actually see like the remains of his fading away as Overhaul's cavalry arrive, and they're all wearing the plague doctor masks. And so it's interesting because in this little moment, it sort of makes it seem like there is some sort of power nullification thing going on that affected both Magna and Compress, but it didn't work on Shigaraki for some reason. So,
It might be based on the fact that he seemed kind of surprised by it, or maybe it, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe you need time to react. I don't know. There is something that you see happen to Compress as he moves forward. Like, a light shines on his shoulder as he's reaching towards Overhaul.
Ah, yeah, you can see something like that.
I'm sure we'll get more information later. But Overhaul's crew basically just are like, all right, we're leaving. And he says, you know, I wanted this to go peacefully, and there's no way that we're going to be able to do that now. But, hey, you know, there's one dead for each of us, so we'll end it here. Let's talk again once everyone's cooled off. Oh, and we owe you an arm. Very casual about how, you know, everything has gone down. Shigaraki calls everyone in and says, you know, don't take action. Twice and Toga are very heated up about what has happened, but they just let him go. Overhaul says, wise choice, facepalm guy, which I'm surprised no one else has called him before, because that is what he is, isn't he? But yeah, he basically says, you know, the offer is still on the table. When you've calmed down, give me a call. And he leaves a business card with contact information on it for Shigaraki to contact him.
It's noted that the guy in the overcoat says something about missed with one shot, but it was still plenty effective, so maybe he's shooting everybody with the power nullifications or something like that. Just missed Shigaraki.
Yeah, the guy in the hood, yeah.
I can't see any panel that indicates he was shot at and missed, so it's a little tough to tell. We're kind of based off that, but this is something I just didn't realize, and I might just be forgetting because it's a while ago. Did Dobby make it out of the fight at the camp? I thought he did.
Yeah, I think he did. Because twice on the clone for him. I know he's not there, but remember that they were all scattered around.
Yeah.
So it's probably, I mean, this is just a meetup location. It is entirely possible that he just didn't make it out for this.
True. I was just trying to remember if he was still...
Yeah, Dobby's still off on his own. Okay. Yeah, he just didn't end up making this meeting, I guess.
Okay. That makes sense.
So yeah, the little powwow with villains went pretty poorly for Shigaraki. And I guess that, Magna is dead now. the chapter that doesn't end on that note, because we see that, Toshiragi? Is that his name? Toshinori. There we go. Has called, in Deku and Mirio to talk with them.
It's a pretty crazy chapter. I mean, it's notable if only for the fact that, you know, My Hero hasn't really executed characters before, particularly not like this. This was a pretty graphic way of being like, hey, I mean, one of these guys is a mook. We didn't even know his name, and he just fucking disintegrated. But Magna, even though he wasn't a notable character, was still someone we had seen before, had interacted with, and had been kind of established to be one of a member of this League of Villains. And he got fucking, not just killed, like, gruesomely exploded, basically.
And Compress lost an arm.
So. Yeah, it was a pretty significant chapter that kind of goes to show that Horikoshi is willing to put a few consequences out there for the sake of building up a new threat, which is entirely what Overhaul is. I can't imagine a scenario where Overhaul's team and Shigaraki's team work together going forward. Unless it's in, like, a pure, like, we're doing this to stop the heroes, but we're secretly underhanding one another as well. Like, they're not going to be friends. They're not going to join up and form a super group, I don't think. But this is a way to kind of, I think, establish Overhaul as maybe a villain that Deku will overcome in the process. But I particularly love Overhaul's speech about, like, no, I'm not joining you. Like, why would I?
You have no idea what you're doing.
You have no plan. You had three amazing uses or resources under your belt, and all of them were arrested and defeated because you had no idea what to do with them. You just sent them out. So I am going to have a plan. I'm going to have resources. I'm going to have mechanics in place, and you can work for me. And I like this because it's kind of a stat. Like, I know we're already kind of getting this idea that Shigaraki is essentially the evil side of, like, not evil side of Deku, but the mirror to Deku, that he's the evil apprentice that is still learning his place in the world, and that this is kind of a big, important lesson for him to learn as a fledgling villain about how to actually run his Legion of Doom, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. It's a very kind of, oh god, what's her character's name? In Luke Cage.
Oh, Mariah? Black Mariah?
Yeah. Her learning basically how to be a crime lord over the course of that season.
Yeah, it's just a thing where, Shigaraki has a powerful group. He has one of the most powerful tools at his disposal, but he still doesn't have really the know-how to effectively run it, and I think even though he won't work for Overhaul, I think this is going to be that motivating factor to learn how to be better than him. It'll be kind of them watching him from the distance. But, it's sad to lose Magna, but I'm interested to see this new character and this new group, basically.
Just when we were getting this weird little insight into his character where there's sort of this implication that he and his friend could potentially both be trans.
Yeah, I think I may have missed it before. I know they say it several times, as they call it, when he explodes, they call Big Sis Mag. So, I wasn't entirely sure of the implication of that. That's what getting to, but then again, I don't want to speak too much out of turn on this because I don't understand Japanese culture.
Well, and also because, like, there's no detail given on that. Just that my childhood friend gave me those words and told me that she believes in me. Bleh. So, yeah.
Remember me! 2 days away from retirement!
Let's see here. Let's hit Food Wars, then.
Were we doing We Never Learn there? We're Fairy Tales? Because it's no Fairy Tale.
Yeah, let's do We Never Learn.
Yeah, for anyone who's confused as to why we're not doing Fairy Tale, there is no Fairy Tale.
It's not out on Crunchyroll.
Yeah, so. I'm just going to really quickly check once more, but
just to see if it's been updated. Yeah,
they didn't have, usually if it's about to come out, they'll at least have like a placeholder, but nope, there's nothing right now, so there's no Fairy Tale this week.
All right, So the first of the many gem starts that we're going to be getting over the next several weeks is We Never Learns by, let's see, the main credit that they're given, Taishi Tsusui, is, wrote a spinoff for Nisekoi called Magical Patissier. It's a French word that means candy maker. Gosaki. So essentially we've got in this story is, it is a romantic comedy basis. It is about, Naruyuki Yuiga? Yeah, there's an I there. Okay. Naruyuki Yuiga. And, he is a very studious guy. But he's always coming in second place in seemingly all of his classes to two different girls. Rizu Ogata, who is essentially a supercomputer. She's referred to as the Thumbelina supercomputer. And then also there is a ditzy girl who's incredibly gifted at writing literature. Fumino Furuhashi, who is the sleeping beauty of the literary forest, because, see, we've got the two fairy tale names for the two. So one is really good at liberal arts stuff, one is really good at the sciences. So Naruyuki is trying desperately to get this special scholarship that this high school offers, which is a full college scholarship that they offer to the most outstanding pupil in the school. And so he's working really hard to beat these two seeming monsters. We get to know his family life because his family is dirt poor. His father is dead. I don't think we know anything. Yeah, we don't see anything about his mother.
I think his mother's
His mom, I guess,
I think it's the older one right there.
Yeah, yeah.
The coat. But yeah, I'm assuming maybe she can't.
She doesn't seem to be well. Yeah. So she can't really support them. So they're poor and they're relying on him to get a good job. So he's like, okay,
I must have missed this the first time I read it, where the kids are running to him like, older brother, we found edible weeds. They specifically said edible weeds. I'm like, oh my God. That's anus. Like, these weeds we can eat.
Just give him the money.
What are you doing?
So, Naruyuki gets called into the principal's office, and the principal says, you're a really strong student, so I'm going to award you the special VIP nomination. And Naruyuki's like, yes, thank you. But there is one condition. Okay? And he calls in the two ace students and says, all right, I will give you that VIP nomination if you become their tutor and get them into their target colleges. So he's like, what? Okay. And he finds out that even though one is really good at sciences and the other is good at liberal arts, they want to go into the opposite college, despite the fact that neither of them have seemingly any talents outside of their specialty. So he's like, he thinks at first, like, oh, this is going to be easy. And like, no, I want to go into science university. Now I'm going to go into liberal arts university. Okay. Well, all right, show me what you can do. And, you know, gives them these, you know, practice exams, and they get, like, single-digit scores. And he's like, why don't you try tutoring each other? No. I don't understand how she doesn't understand it, and vice versa.
I think my favorite thing is when he gives them the test again with the exact same questions, and they scored absolutely zero. He's like, how did you not even get the same questions you got last time, right?
So he's like, oh God, no wonder all the previous tutors have given up on each other. That's when he brings up, why don't you tutor each other in your own fields? No, I don't understand why she doesn't understand. Fine. So he's like, okay, well, you know, why don't you go into your own specialty? Like, you know, why don't you just do what you're good at? We don't really have time. We're all seniors here. We don't have time really for you to do that, to actually go outside your specialties and be like, oh, I knew you gave up on us too. That's what all the previous tutors have said. So why is it that only talent matters in this world? I'm sick of you, but people like you deciding on my life like that. So they leave, and they end up leaving their textbooks behind. So he goes home with their textbooks, and he's like, whatever, I'll get them back tomorrow. And he happens to take a glance inside their textbooks, and he sees that they've got all these notes, stuff circled and crossed out, and like little notes like, I don't get it. It's so frustrating. How am I supposed to understand this? And so on and so forth. And, so he realized like, okay, they clearly actually do feel strongly about this. And he has a flashback to when, he brought home a really bad, test score one day to his father. He's like, I only got 4 points. And his dad's like, oh, that's great, though. You've got lots of room for improvement. That's way better than being able to do everything from the start. Listen, Naruyuki, don't forget this frustration. You'll grow up a person who understands people's struggles. Only those who have struggled can understand the struggles of others.
Nick, when you came home with a bad test score, is that what your dad said to you?
No, he said, you better study harder.
I need to live vicariously through you, Nick, because I tried to answer this question myself, and I was like, oh, wait, my dad wasn't around to actually give me responses. My dad wasn't around to comment on my horrible test scores.
My dad, both my parents were both very patient whenever my sister and I had problems like that, but it was very much like, it was essentially like, by the time that we actually started struggling with school, they knew both of us well enough to know, it was like, okay, I know that you're smart enough to do this. I know that you're smart enough to figure this out. You just need to work hard and, you know, actually study. So it was more a matter of like, we're going to be a little bit stricter with you now to make sure that you get better grades.
We're going to beat you with this jumper cable from outside your room until we feel that you've gotten all the knowledge planted into your head. Like, this doesn't seem like a legal thing.
So, Naruyuki the next day returns the test books to his two students, to which Furuhashi says, OMG, OMG, OMG.
Of course you did.
Yeah. So he says, by the way, are you sure that you want to do this? What if, you know, you fail again and again and all the time you put in gets wasted? And they're like, no, we're sure. We feel strongly about the subjects and specialties we've chosen. He's like, okay, good. Because otherwise, well, I've wasted my time. He gives them these really detailed notes, to look over. He says, okay, I've looked over your books, I looked over the notes that you made in them, and I got an idea for your stumbling blocks. I remembered that when you don't understand something you just keep throwing yourself at and failing, you'll feel even worse. I used to be a total failure in school. No matter how much I studied, my grades didn't improve. It was awful. So I know what it feels like to struggle. Even if you're geniuses, if you can't succeed at what you want to do, that's gotta hurt. So I know I can make you both very happy, so please do it with me. And they're like, wait, that sounds sexual. And he's like, no, I didn't. No, shut up. So this is where we get like, oh, he cares. So they kind of get a little crush on him. Big two-page spread of them blushing while holding their notebooks and going, thank you. And then he blushes like, oh, wait, they're kind of cute. And, then we get random fan service.
Well, it's weird because to this point, I was really kind of I was into this story. Like it was simple in its premise, but I like the execution. I like that this main lead actually kind of felt like he was a hardworking guy. He actually had some like real struggle behind him. You know, before you find out that he was poor, I was like, oh, this is a little pompous. Like a guy who's just like, I can't believe there's a super genius that's better than me. But then you're like, no, this is a guy who's working his ass off and he just can't beat these super geniuses. But they put a twist on that the two girls both want to do something that they're just awful at. And it has a nice little conclusion to it, wrapping up with his own flashback with his father, which is a big motivation for him.
Yeah.
So it has that nice ending. Now it's fine with the little tease that, you know, that he thinks they're both cute and that they might be blushing because maybe there's something there as well. Because I'm like, hey, look, it's a jump start. This is intended to be a long-running series. They had to put some hook at the end of this, and obviously it's going to be a romantic comedy of some kind.
Right, right.
It's when the next shot is, like, one of the girls taking off her skirt, and I was like, holy shit, is she going to turn out to be, like, a werewolf? Or like, oh, or she's, like, a mannequin? Like, she's a fucking mannequin come to life?
There's a vampire?
Yeah, I was like, oh, like, what, she's a mannequin. Like, they reveal she has no genitalia at all when she's completely nude. And she's like, infiltration complete! Because that's how mannequins talk when they're infiltrating. They just scream it out really loudly like robots. us. And that's the story. It's this horror story of this mannequin woman who's going to kill this kid. But instead, it's just about a bunch of girls bathing while thinking about how hot he is.
It's so weird. It really felt as though, because it's so tacked on at the end, it really felt as though Susui-sensei, he wrote this whole chapter, and the editor was like, we need a little fan service in this.
It's like he finished a chapter.
Okay, hang on, let me get back to this. Shower scenes. Where does this go? At the end?
Right at the end of everything. I really think it was like at a point where the editor was like, this is good. We're about 3 pages short, and I'm wondering if we won't be able to hook the teenage boys. Can these two girls just decide to shower? He's like, yeah, I wouldn't really have much of a context for why I'm displaying it to the readers. He's like, we don't need to worry about that. When is there ever not a good time to show 15-year-old girls showering and bathing? He's like, you're the editor.
I mean, especially the first girl who looks severely underage in that picture.
Well, I mean, the other one's 4'6", so it's not much better.
Well, the other one is short, but at least you can tell that she has hit puberty. The other one, though, is like, if someone saw you, like, reading that, then it would be like, yeah, okay, I'm gonna need you to, like, come by the neighborhood and introduce yourself to all the people.
You gotta put a couple signs out in front of your lawn.
They are all, like, in their third year of high school, it's established, so. But that girl doesn't look it.
It's weird. I felt like, I was about to, like, start delving into, like, what I thought her body type was. I was like, you know what? I don't need to go here. I feel like I can hold much dignity for myself if I do.
Let's not start describing what we thought the measurements of the 17-year-olds were.
She's like, I thought that was the busty one. Giant Cans Literature Girl. Wasn't that her nickname?
Well, she's like, I guess it would fit the stereotype of she's the ditzy one. And, yeah, there is that kind of thing. She's the genius ditz. There is that kind of character archetype, I guess, going on there. And I got a text message. Yes, I know.
It's the mannequin people that are coming for you now too, Nick.
So
the only way you can know is if you catch them bathing. Which I don't know why they need to do. They're mannequins. It seems like an odd front to put on. Especially because the water would soak away the plastic or the wood or whatever they're made out of.
Return to home base. Clothing no longer necessary.
Everywhere around the world, we just keep seeing schoolgirl uniforms laying on the ground like, oh god, they're everywhere!
Okay, someone actually in the chat said this had a middle start, 6 out of 10, and I think that is pretty much exactly how I feel about this, honestly. So, it feels slightly above average to me. Because, honestly, like, there's some interesting bits here and there. I like I really do think that Narayuki shines in this. Uh-huh. I really like getting to know him, and seeing this, like, okay, he seemed like this hyper-competitive, asshole. But then you get to know him more, and it's like, okay, this is why he's so competitive, is because he's got a reason to want to win the scholarship, is that, you know, he has people riding on him and depending on him. So I do like him. We really don't get much of a feel for the two girls beyond, you know, this one is the genius ditz who's really into poetry and stuff, and then this one is the hyper analytical robot
slash tsundere kind of. She's the one who's definitely a lot more aggressive of the two.
Mm-hmm.
They give them enough though that you can kind of see their personalities be developed into something funny. There is like the joke they have when they both fail zeros on the test, and like the one girl is like, "I'm sorry, I'm a maggot." The other one's like, "There must be some mistake." It's like, no, you were a fucking 2 last time. All right.
The mistake is yours. Yeah. But you know, it is just the first chapter. And so I am holding out hope that's like, okay, well, maybe we'll get to know them more and there will be more to like about this. The one thing that does stand out to me is that honestly, I wasn't really so much into, I didn't really care for a lot of the humor in this chapter. There are a couple of moments here and there, but it felt like it wasn't as funny to me as it should have been.
I feel so, like part of it might also be we might have to, like, pull our expectations back a little bit, because this is essentially trying to fill the void of Nisekoi.
Right.
And Nisekoi, it was kind of a unique entity in and of itself with just how earnest it was with so much of how it kind of portrayed itself. Never really felt it as exploitive. There wasn't a shower scene between Chitige and Onodera in the first chapter of Nisekoi, to put it bluntly.
I mean, it wasn't above doing fan service entirely, let's be fair.
Yeah, but it definitely didn't feel like it had to resort to that so much. It just felt like it peppered it in there from time to time. But no, I just feel like, in general, the characters and their emotions were worn a little bit more on their sleeve, and it felt a little bit more innocent because of that, which was kind of a refreshing take for a Jump romantic comedy. So I think comparing it to that, you're going to have to suffer a little bit of the more less original characters and a little bit of all that. But I still appreciate knowing what generally tends to come out of this genre, and knowing how bland and copy-paste it tends to feel, I'm still able to appreciate them. Like, there's some hints of, you know, originality here, and some earnest attempts at, like, you know, real emotion and growth in these characters.
I am curious to see, because there are a couple of suggestions and jokes being thrown around the chat, and this was something that I considered before. Are there going to be more students as time goes by that Narayuki would have to tutor? Is he going to, is it going to turn into a harem series where all of them are, you know, students that he's got to tutor who are into things that are totally not their specialty and stuff?
I would really hope that I could see it happening. I would hope that it's not just the same gimmick over and over. Mm-hmm. Like, I hope it's not like, oh, this is a super athletic girl, but she wants to be involved in, I don't know, like, fucking
theater. Yeah.
Or, oh, it's the theater girl, but she really wants to be an ace tennis player or something like that. That's when I'd reached a point where I'm like, look, you could definitely do, because the title of the series, We Never Learn, it's based on essentially learning disabilities, you know, that these kids have. So it'd be nice to kind of emphasize that in different ways than just, oh, they're really good at one thing, but they're chosen, you know, they want their passions in a different field. There's definitely more ways to take that premise. And then there's just the fact that
sports girl wants to do cage.
You know, it'd be something different, I guess. But yeah, no. But no, I do think there's definitely some territory for them to branch out into, but I'm just willing to give the series the benefit of the doubt. I enjoyed the first chapter by and large, the first last few with pages with the withholding, but withstanding, but still by and large, I really enjoyed it. And I'm excited to see more.
Given the number of failed romantic comedies series that I've shonen that I've checked out over the last couple of years, I definitely think that it could have legs. But I mean, time will tell, really. Okay. Now we're gonna do Food Wars.
Yes.
Skipping pages. Okay, here we go.
John.
Chapter 201. Takumi's tenacity.
Say that three times fast, Nick.
Takumi's tenacity. Takumi. Yeah. Fuck.
Yeah.
I got up to three at least. So this is a big Takumi chapter, big Aldini chapter. We begin with a little bit of a flashback, but I think that we'll get to that later. Our cover page is a depiction of the 3-on-3 competition that's currently going on, the story between Dojima's team with Megumi and Takumi, and then Saiba's team with Soma and Erina, as if they're chess pieces squaring off. And I like how all of them are in costume. We've got the two kings. Soma and Takumi are knights squaring off. Megumi is a bishop. And then there's Erina, who's just inside of a rook. Just sticking her head out. Like, oh.
Doesn't seem to be quite aware of what's happening, but...
What is going on? Why are we chess pieces? That tickled me so much when I first saw it. Like, oh, okay, they're chess pieces. Why is Erina just inside of a freaking castle tower?
Sure.
So we basically recap where we are, where we were last time, with Dojima's team working seamlessly together without having to speak to each other. Meanwhile, Soma and Saiba are bickering and can't at all get along, and they're having to apologize to Senzaemon, or else he's going to disqualify them They're so worked up that Saiba's like trying to argue the rules with Senzaima. I was like, we weren't even in the kitchen area. Our utensils are down. So technically we weren't cooking, so talking was fine.
So this is a tangent, but I just wanted to note something.
Oh, no.
I know, we don't do these. On page, I guess it would be 147 of it. Okay. There's, yeah, at the top panel, I know what Megumi seems like she's doing, turning on the oven.
She's checking the oven, yeah.
Why the fuck is she, like, on her hands and knees, like, bent over, like, peering at that fucking oven as though it were a supercomputer she was trying to figure out a complex code on?
She's been peering at it for several minutes now, trying to figure out what to do with it.
I really want, like, a thought process of her mind. She's like, I don't know what they're doing next, so if I look like I'm staring really intently at this, they'll think I'm working.
I'll bet it's in order to make sure that she actually fits entirely into the panel while she's actually in the background.
Almost certainly, but I like that moment there. I'm just like, what is she doing so intently, like, on her knees staring at the oven?
And she's up and moving around immediately after she does that, too.
Sorry, just a random thought.
So Erina is like, come on, you can hear us. Stop freaking squabbling with your dad. We should just support him. And so, like, ha ha ha, Nakira, you're breaking the rules because you're speaking too. And Erina's like, shut up!
Oh, she doesn't say shut up. She screams, stop laughing! Which just ends up, I was like, like, all right.
I really like the face that she makes in that, the way that, like, her mouth is, like, she's so furious that her mouth is splitting open, but you can see, like, her lips curling up to show her fangs and stuff.
I think I've really come to enjoy the fact that Erina has kind of been completely taken out of that role as, like, the haughty onlooker, super rich, powerful girl, and she's really been kind of, not reduced, I should say, but placed more in a role where they're able to kind of joke at her expense, and you get to like, her more human, like, seeing her have that reaction of almost like a fucking, like, a scolded child, like that.
Oh, my God.
It's just funny to see that from her. It's nice kind of change from what she was before.
She's out of her element, so that, you know, veil of control is gone, so you get to see kind of the person she is underneath come out as she reacts more genuinely to stuff. Uh-huh. We got hints of that way back when Soma would loan her the manga in exchange for favors and stuff, and you guys just, like, she was, like, actually super into it, but she didn't want to people to know that and stuff. But Soma brings up that he doesn't understand why his dad has gone such a weird way to go about making the recipe, which Erina agrees with mentally. And she's like, why didn't he follow the traditionally accepted recipe like Chef Jojima did? Meanwhile, over on Dojima's side, he is actually starting to change up the recipe too, because he's adding in, like, basil and anchovies, stuff that isn't in the recipe. Whatever. I don't know how the fuck you make...
I'm sorry, I shouldn't do this tangent, but I'm going to, so forgive me.
Okay.
There was at one point, before my cat passed away, great start to a comedy bit. I was planning to do a comedy series called Cookie with Liam, and it was going to be me and my cat, and it was just going to be my cat sitting at a table, and I'd have, like, a really shitty, like, Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, like, cat hand up in there and be like, we're going to be making, like, steak tartare today. And Liam's sole contribution would be like, more basil! And I'd be like, really? It seems like a lot of basil in there already. And he's like, more basil! Until it's like I've just dumped it in there and it just ruined. I'm like, well, there you go, Liam. You got all the basil you wanted. Have one. He's like, I hate basil. And then he just, like, jumps off the table after farting in it once or something like that. And I can't...
Do you remember the episode of Courage the Cowardly Dog where Muriel turns into a child?
I feel like I do.
And Courage has to make her food. So he starts making her macaroni and cheese, and, you know, brings her the macaroni and cheese, and she's like, more macaroni! And he's like, and Goose makes the macaroni and cheese again, there's more macaroni. He's like, less cheese! There's less cheese on the next thing. More macaroni and more cheese! Less cheese and more macaroni! He does it, like, six times, and then she finally brings her this weird, multi-layered assortment of macaroni and cheese, and she's like, perfect! And throws it in his face, like, I hate macaroni and cheese!
Damn it, Courage the Cowardly Dog got to my cookie with Liam bit before me. Now you're gonna tell me my hilarious idea. Why dress up as a mummy? Mandy people, give me back the slab or I unleash curses on their houses. This is a unique and original idea.
The Manigas, the Manigas.
That's a fucking wonderful show.
I remember my brother telling me that episode terrified the shit out of me for the longest
time. That's a fucking scary, scary episode.
Well, I remember for the longest time I didn't get it, and I watched it a little bit, you know, under the influence, and I was like, now I see why this episode's scary.
That guy is, that guy's not anime like the rest of them are. Also, he summons locusts to eat all of them.
Oh, I'm sorry. People are like, what, anyway, food wars?
Let's get back from the three tangents we just went on. So, essentially, Arina comes to the realization, and now that Dojima is changing up the recipe, that both Saiba and Dojima are doing stuff on the fly, changing the recipe on the fly, and so she realizes that they're doing that to test the students, to see, I guess to see if they can keep up with them instead of just following a book following a recipe out of the book. They've got to figure out what the chef wants to do as they're doing it. And all of a sudden, we get a Takumi flashback, to when Totsuki, was not doing their, stagiaire, program. And so we get to see inside of Restaurant Fujibame's, as they're, this very, like, we are a traditional Japanese restaurant, complete with, we have a Japanese style garden. All of us wear robes and everything. And they're like, oh, we've got this, very, promising young man coming here. And there are some girls who work there who are like, oh, he's so handsome. What a feast for the eyes. That silky, shimmering golden hair.
Looks like a half-breed to me. Stuck up, if that's my opinion.
Like, oh, all right.
He's kind of a racist, isn't he?
Get that filthy mud blood out of my restaurant. Like, sir, you can't say that to him. He's a human Hermione being.
Hermione shows up and punches him in the nose.
Oh, Sakai, what, we're letting chicks into the kitchen now? This whole country's gone to shit.
And then Takumi arrives and introduces himself, and he's cut his hair super short.
Yeah, I don't quite get the significance. Like, I get it. He's like, I came here to show how
I'm serious.
Yeah, like I wasn't gonna have my long hair because that would get in the way of cooking at this traditional kitchen where they have the specific headwear. Otherwise, my hair would be like, you know, falling out of place. But it just seems weird to, like, put this in a flashback when his hair's already grown back to natural length. Back in the past, I cut my hair.
Samurai Jack. Because they were away for, like, a full month for stagiaire. So he could have cut it just at the beginning, and then it would have grown back, I guess, to its normal length by the time he got back, yeah. It's not like he freaking shaved.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not so drastic of a haircut that I'm like, oh, he was willing to do that? I was like, yeah, he just got rid of his stupid, like, fucking boy band haircut and moved to another stupid boy band haircut.
He's still got bangs.
Look.
It's not like he got a crew cut.
You think the girls are going to be over there talking about it if he doesn't have bangs? No, come on.
Oh, yeah, that was the other thing. They make a big deal. It's like, oh, he's such a heartthrob. And he shows up, it's like, his hair is short. It's like, it's not like he's hideous.
They're like, what a monster! Kill it! Burn it with fire!
We get a flashback within a flashback. Essentially, Takumi is like, oh, one day I will challenge you, Yukihira, and during these finals we're going to put an end to the match we started way back during Hell Camp. And of course he lost to Mimasaka. And on top of that, he had to have his Mezaluna returned to him by Soma, who had to win it back. And he has this big freak out about that. You know, this was so humiliating. What could be more frustrating than that? What could be more mortifying than that? The way I've been up to now is not good enough. The Aldini cooking ideals and beliefs that I've built up across the years are not good enough. I have to tear down all of those old ideals and break free of the old me. And we flash back to the present, where Aldini is also making changes on the fly to the recipe with adding in, you know, like olive oil and vinegar and all this stuff, getting more ingredients ready. And so they're like, what is he seriously like going to, you know, make more changes while Dojima's, has been on top of the ones Dojima's already making. And, so they're like, okay, well, or does he actually understand what Dojima's up to? And he's going to just offer his own improvement to complement that as well. And yeah, Senzamon is like, ah, yes, he has grown. I can sense a fire in him that wasn't there before. A tenacious determination, so intense, it's almost crude. Takumi looks over at Soma, who is just kind of staring and watching him. And he's like, what are you doing? You know, our goal is to rescue Isami and the others. So how can you let yourself get tripped up here? Never mind that this is merely training, just a random scrimmage with the two of us in supporting roles. This is still La Cocina. This is our battleground, Yukihira. And that finally gets Soma fired up because one of his rivals is challenging him. And so, yeah. Good chapter, I thought.
Yeah, I know some people are saying it in chat. I do understand the notion of like, huh, does this kind of feel out of nowhere? And I shouldn't say it feels out of nowhere so much as it is... It feels as though this sudden, kind of push on Aldini feels out of nowhere. All this stuff makes sense. Like, you know, this is the truth. He did want to fight Soma in the Fall Classic. He did lose in, the first round, essentially. He was kind of humiliated by that. And knowing the kind of person Aldini is, knowing how similar he is to Soma, you would realize that he's been strongly motivated since that moment to kind of get better. And they noted that everyone at Stagiaire Week went out and improved, that they got better. So, suddenly getting this moment, yeah, it probably does have to play a part in the fact that Aldini somehow ranked in the top five of the last character popularity poll.
It's because he's such a heartthrob, Chris.
Yeah, he has those bangs. If the girls had seen him with that short hair, they never would have voted for him. But more than that, I think it just goes to kind of reinforce a sentiment that's kind of been expressed this series, that Aldini is one of Soma's biggest rivals in competitions, that he's essentially his main rival at his age. And I get it. He's not per se as interesting as some of the other ones Soma's gotten since then. Like, he's not as cool as Kurokiba, and he's not as, like, charismatic as Hayama. But I think this does go at least a good way to making him more exciting and making it give a little bit more fire to the situation they're in now. Because when you see that Aldini's serious about this and he's not just a hanger-on for all of this, it makes things more exciting. I like that little line there about, like, you know, stop fucking goofing around. What are you doing, Yukihira? This is still La Cucina. This is our battleground. So, and giving him that stare, like, it's nice seeing that kind of whip Soma into shape, too. So, I think this was a really cool chapter because I finally, you know, have a reason that I feel get excited about Takumi.
If we're going to cut down the main cast for this big competition to these four students and potentially plus one more, then, yeah, this is a good, big opportunity to really get to know them better and to build them up more. And, I mean, Megumi is not quite in as much of a need of this character building as Takumi is, but she's been very passive recently. And it would be nice to see her also get that kind of moment where she really comes into her own. If we're going to cut the cast down to, you know, these guys, then they should take advantage of this big chance for them to really stand out and develop. If we're not going to have Alice and Kurokiba, then
yeah, I mean,
then damn it, Megumi and Eren and Takumi better become as interesting and entertaining as them.
Yeah, basically.
Right, and let's move on to the Promised Neverland.
Nothing happened, Nick. Let's just skip over it.
Nothing happened. Chapter 25, Inspection Part 2. So, Mom has caught up to Emma and Norman, who are, of course, still putting on the act like, oh,
yeah, we're innocent children and have no idea that we're livestock.
But internally, of course, they're thinking, it's like, what are you thinking? What's going on here? Why is she here? Why didn't we get warned by Don and Gilda? What happened to Ray? Is she planning on shipping us out immediately? And while they're thinking about all that, they're of course going, and Rebecca says, not Rebecca, because she's not an important character. What was her name? I forget her actual name. Crone would cover that.
Which one?
Mom.
Oh.
What's her actual name?
Isabella.
Right, Isabella. She says, you know, we've been together for 10 years, but this is the first time for us to talk without acting. So nice to meet you, Emma, and nice to meet you, Norman. Going on. And she says, oh, relax. Don't worry, it's just me. No one else is here. You don't have to pretend to be good kids who don't know anything. Here, in this moment, we're just the caretaker and the children meant to be food. But don't get me wrong. I love you, children. I adore you, truly. As if you were my own children. That's why I'm here. I want you to give up. And I was like, no one says, give up what? Give up resisting, because I love you. I don't want you to suffer. I don't want to have to make you all suffer. It's a happy life, isn't it? A warm house filled with delicious food and love. You don't starve or get cold without knowing the truth. You can die with a satisfied feeling. What part of this life is unhappy? And I like the way that things play out, because we've kind of got this idealized image that she is describing as she says all this, of, you know, her like hugging the kids and all of them being happy together and eating at the same table. Bright sunny day outside, yay. But Emma is just thinking about, you know, children dying that she's seen. And she gets a big grimace on her face. I was like, well, of course that, though. And Mom says, it's impossible to escape. It's dangerous outside. It's full of despair. So let's live happily inside the house. For the limited amount of time until the end, I want you five to be happy. So Norman and Emma are like, okay. She's not planning on shipping us out. She wants to control us. She wants to, that's why she's trying to persuade us from this. But the problem is that her method is very different from before. And what happened with Ray, has she cut him out of everything? Does she not trust him anymore? Okay. If this is the case, if she's trying to control us directly, that means that right now, this is the only chance we have to go and inspect. Because then they're like, okay, well, what do we do then? They're like, okay, should we take the risk here? What are we supposed to do? Of course, Ray is, you know, running in, trying to think, oh, you've got to go now. And Norman's got the big monologue, internal monologue going on while this is happening. And he's considering all of his possible options. And he's caught on to a couple of things that she said, like, oh, she said, you know, I want you five to be happy. So that means she knows that Don and Gilda are on our side, too. She probably knows about Ray's betrayal. But she still wants to control us, so this is just the method that she's choosing. And Mom won't ship us out immediately just for inspecting the vicinity, that means. So, that means that we're really special. The highest quality of goods that she cannot pluck so easily. We won't lose, and we won't flinch. That looked like bunch to me, and so I hesitated. Sorry. So, he's, you know, gathers his guts and says, you know, no matter what the world is like outside, I want to live together with everyone. And he says, okay, Mom. I'll quit being a good boy. And Emma takes action immediately. She runs towards Mom to try and stop her. And just thinking, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to get the inspection done. I'll keep Mom here. Even if it's just for 5 or 10 seconds, I'll buy time for Norman. And I'll grab the device if I can. And Norman will be able to disappear. And we can... So Mom takes Emma down. And breaks her leg.
I guess now we see why the moms take judo classes. It is to beat the shit out of 5-year-olds. Like, what? Like, that to be the class. They're like, no, no, no. What you're doing, this technique would be very suitable for an adult, but you're using it on somebody like 9 times lighter than you and at least 2 feet smaller. You gotta snap it like it's cardboard. You just gotta,
just get in there.
You gotta throw that teddy bear they're holding right away and snap their leg in half. Throw that basic geometry book away, because they're not gonna need to where they're going.
So, very creepily, after, you know, breaking the kid's leg, Mom gets her in this big hug. It's like, oh, it's okay. It doesn't hurt. It's all right. Oh, that's why I told you to give up. But you haven't hugged me in a while, so that made me happy. Oh.
Ugh.
Norman has stopped because he was so surprised, so shocked by Emma getting her leg broken. And so Mom says, oh, you realize too. Amazing. You know, you're right. I'll control you all until the end. That is how special you are. Special food that only a special one can eat. The highest quality of children that I have raised. And that's why I have to protect you, no matter what. I had to do this if you weren't going to give up. You won't be able to move for a while. You can survive until tomorrow, safely. And they're like, tomorrow? Yes. So stay put and celebrate, Emma. I got a notice from headquarters. Congratulations, Norman. Your shipment has been set.
Bum,
and
bum,
she says
bum,
that just
bum,
as...
Bum, bum. Dramatic reverb.
She says this just as Dawn and Gilda and Ray arrive at the scene. Oh. That happened.
Well, this is very exciting. One, it's finally, there's no pretense anymore. There's no, like, you know, hey, you all make sure you're back home for dinner. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, wink. They're just outright being like, all right, so you know about me trying to basically raise you until I can feed you to the monsters. And it's well, nice to kind of have that out here.
Special monster, as it turns out, too.
It's nice to have that out in the open. Like, that's kind of done with now. But yeah.
The series can take the next step after this.
I mean, we are definitely going to be moving to something pretty crazy now. Something insane is going to happen based on the fact that, look, Emma's leg's broken. I'm hoping the series isn't one that's going to be like, Emma, through the act of friendship, is able to endure her leg being broken, to hop over this wall and venture out into the Badlands, fighting off Deathclaws and super mutants everywhere. You know, that's how are they going to get out of a situation like that when Norman's supposedly going to be shipped off tomorrow, it sounds like. Yeah. So
they don't have time to make a plan. Emma can't escape with them if they do, or it seems that way. Their cover is blown. There's no pretense between them. How are they going to even think about managing to get the other children to come with them with all that working against them?
Yeah. It's very exciting. I think this is a really cool chapter, and I think it definitely... I already put her on the list for Best Villain of 2017 thus far. Mom's been killing it this year, and it's only February. And I guess I shouldn't say killing it, because she actually did kill Crone, so I guess that was...
She actually did get Crone killed, yes.
But it's just... This is a very effective chapter for her. I still feel like we haven't actually seen the real Mom. Like, I know she says, this is my real side, but I feel like it's just another level of things, because it's so much... It was, like, one step away from, like, licking Emma's face as she's comforting her about, like, fucking nursing her back to health. She's like, oh, it's so good. We haven't hugged in a while. But,
oh, let me look up your tears.
Oh, they fuel me.
Oh, they're just as good as I remember. You've looked at my tears before? Well, you were a baby. Shut up.
She's like, yeah. You keep, I think...
Is that weird when you were a baby?
What do you think? I keep playing Toy Story 3 and all the Pixar movies for you. She's like, is that why every movie we own is a sad one? And Bad
yes,
Boys 2?
Yes, the entire Pixar collection, yes. really had a big surprise reading this. God, just overall, got a good week of manga, really. Mm-hmm. So, that happened. Let's move on. next, we're going to talk about Black Clover. Black Clover, page... What the fuck are we on?
96.
Page 96, Transformation, with a very Queen Elsa-looking Noelle on our color page. So, last time, Asta threw his magic absorption sword like a javelin, and it went into Ladros' shoulder. And he fell down as a result. So, Ladros begs for mercy from Asta as he has him held at cleaver point. And he's like, oh, come on, stop. I'll stop hurting people. Spare me. Take the sword out because I can't get it on my own. And Asta's like, no!
Please?
He's like, I know how strong you are, so I'm not going to get careless. If I take that out and you attack me, I'll never win. I'm dumb, so I can't afford to mess up to begin with. Well, I mean, if you put it that way.
Sure you can. Just, you know, take the sword out for a real quick moment here.
Well, I promise I won't kill anyone while you taking it out, you know.
Yeah, fingers crossed. It counts if I cross my tongue.
And Ladris says, oh, but I'll die. And I says, that's not enough to kill anybody. I avoided your vital spots. I don't believe for a second that Asta threw his sword with fucking surgical precision.
He's like, but what about my shoulder heart? Oh my god, your shoulder heart? That would be the best way for Ladris to get him. He's like, my shoulder kidneys, they're almost cut. I'm going to die. Asta's like, I forgot about those. Pulls it out.
Like, I totally believe that Asta would be like, no, you're fine. That's not enough to kill somebody. I do not for a second believe that he's like, no, I threw it with great precision so that it would not be a fatal wound. Like, no, you got lucky. So Latris is like, shit, this kid's battle tested. So what am I going to do? How am I going to get away? So he's like, okay, I've got barely any magic. If I attack him and he blocks it, then I'm finished. So he instead uses what little magic he has to launch himself away, and then he uses reinforcement magic so he can actually tug out the sword, and just, he brutally just rips it out of himself. As, okay, I've got magic left for 2 magic bullets! So he rushes over towards Fauna and grabs her, and he's like, okay, hostage time! Very quick, the sequence that we have here with him, reminds me of the fight between Dio and, Jotaro. You know, the running away, style of the villain.
Yeah.
So, he's like, okay, Fauna, use that magic from before. Use it now. And she's like, what are you talking about? Use your magic! Or I'll kill Mars! Bah! Launches one of the 2 magic bullets that he has the capability left to do at Mars and hurts him. And he's like, and on the next one, I'll kill him with it. So Fauna freaks out and the salamander comes out of her and rushes towards Ladros. It's like, okay, gamble time. And he just lets it hit him. Clearly hurts him, but his magic absorption ability kicks in and he manages to absorb it. And, he goes full on, Super Saiyan with it. He's got the aura of Salamander pouring out of his body, fire pouring off of him, forming claws around his hands. And he says, ah, it's the greatest magic I've ever eaten. And he licks part of the flames.
It's actually kind of a pretty cool visual. Like, I love seeing, like, this mantle of flames behind him and, like, how the fire actually shapes itself into claws around his fingers. And
around his cloak, too.
And essentially, because of his weird face, it basically looks like you're almost staring into, like, one of the comedy mask.
Mm-hmm. So Asta rushes towards Ladros, but Ladros has his magic power back, so he just starts bombarding him with long-range attacks. He hits him with a bullet to the shoulder to start things off with. It's so fast because with his new power-up that Asta can't block it or dodge it. And Ladros goes on this big rant, saying, oh, the other 8 generals won't stand a chance against me. I could take the whole kingdom. I'll slaughter everyone who's ever looked down on me. But before that, I'll finish you off.
I can't help but feel like, Nick, with this grand speech, that Ladros has basically sentenced himself to death. Because he's basically like, fuck all my allies! I'm unstoppable now!
I'm invincible!
The fucking bag of powder falls in his head. He's like, oh, that wasn't so bad at all! What the fuck happens to that guy in Golden Knight? Hold on, I have to look this up.
He survives the cradle collapsing around him, and then nitroglycerin, like, explodes behind him. Not nitroglycerin, but, like, liquid nitros explodes behind him and freezes him solid.
Is that what happens?
He survives the cradle collapsing and goes, yes, I'm invincible! And then, like, nitros goes off behind him and frees him solid in his I'm invincible pose.
Wait a minute! Alan Cumming was in that movie? I legitimately thought he just got, well, I need to watch this fucking movie again.
Wait a minute, Trevelyan was Sean Bean?
Wait a minute, Trevelyan wasn't a good guy? So, I have to watch this movie again, because I legitimately, for the longest time, thought he got covered with, like, flour or something. I was like, well, that's lame, that sucks, he needed his comeuppance.
Wait a minute, Trevelyan doesn't die at the beginning of that movie? said the guy who only beat 4 missions in the GoldenEye game.
I only actually played the final levels, which weren't actually in the game at all. I played, like, the stages that were callbacks to other movies.
With Jaws and,
Yeah, Moon and all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
That fucking Egyptian room we had to walk the path perfectly right that I don't know how anyone was supposed to solve unless you had a GameFAQs account or, like,
a
manual.
You can't get the Golden Gun without that shit, yeah.
And I feel like the GoldenEye would have been a lot easier movie to solve if you just... If instead of James Bond, they just had Oddjob on his knees, frictionlessly skating across the ground, karate chopping people in their ankles and killing them. Like I did.
You know body armor doesn't go down that far. Fuck you.
Fatunk. Like, ow, stop it.
My brother. Damn, it is so hard to aim down in this game.
You ever remember that Simpsons episode where it's like Bart and Lisa about to play rock, paper, scissors, and like Bart's like, Lisa's like, poor old Bart always picks rock. And Bart's like, nothing beats that. It was like me and my brother with GoldenEye, because every time, like, I'm just going to pick Oddjob, because stupid old Mikey always picks the tallest character in the game, so he has to look down to see me. And every time he'd pick Jaws, and I'm like, anyway.
Double Jaws, nothing beats that. He's got twin AKs.
He has metal teeth he can't use.
He's got twin AKs, which you can't get in the versus mode.
All right. Back to Black
Clover. Right. So Asta basically gets knocked out by the super assault the Ladras launches on him. And we cut to the Witch Queen observing everything through the viewing globe. And she says to herself, since he's able to use that sword, I thought he might be their descendant. But, she raises her hand, show me what you really are. And Ladras is poised to finish Asta off, of course, but all of a sudden, Asta comes to. He starts to press himself upward, and there are black flames swirling around his sword arm. So I'm sure that Annalise read this and was like, he's the Demon King! I did actually really like this chapter, I'll say. It was nice to see Ladros just being pure scumbag, going through every resort and turning the tables by using every trick that he could possibly think of, and then the promise of, oh, Asta's not just going to win this fight the way he wins every fight. He's going to get his evil demon possession thing going on. I will say, though, that I kind of wish this one chapter had been two. I wish that things had been drawn out a bit so that we ended, like, one chapter with Ladros successfully duping Fauna and getting his big power up. And then, you know, the next chapter, he beats up Asta for a while, and that one ends with Asta getting his power up. Because it really felt like things kind of moved a bit too quickly from, oh, Ladros has been defeated, to, oh, Asta's down for a count and needs his demon possession thing to go on so that he can win.
I guess it makes sense in the fact that essentially everyone else at this point has been kind of KO'd except for fucking light novel dude. So I guess there's not too many people to comment to or commenting on with. If it's so, like, there's not much to really, like, turn to give these extra space. But no, I do see what you mean where it was a case where you're like, oh, I think this would have been really effective, like, more effective if the end of this was like, oh, shit, he's gotten that superpower in the next chapter that ends with this, oh, he's the Demon King twist. Like, but hey, I as you said, I still like that we got some more out of Ladras. I'm sad because this essentially is going to guarantee we're not going to see Ladras again. I have a hard time seeing him come back. Even if they take the Phoenix magic out of him, I don't know how anyone would just, like, accept this dude back into the group.
After you've gotten your super final boss one-winged angel power-up, how can you get defeated without dying from that point?
And also,
he blew his load with like, I'm going to hold this girl hostage, and I'm going to threaten to kill that guy, and I'm going to declare that I'm going to kill all the other generals and take over the Diamond Kingdom.
Yeah, I was like, it was the loudly cackling about your soon-to-be betrayal of all your allies that I think really hosed you over there. But hey, who knows? You know, anything could happen, but I would be surprised to see if Ladras survives this. But hey, I'll appreciate the fact that we got more of them than we were even expecting, like, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
And also, like I said, you know, a different way for us to win his fight is refreshing. Okay, let's do Ruby.
Ruby chapter 13. I want to know, nobody's been able to confirm this yet. So if anyone can confirm if next week is the last chapter of Ruby or not, or if the next chapter is actually the last chapter, let me know. Because if this is the penultimate chapter of the fucking Ruby manga, I don't even fucking know anymore. Because this is literally 8 pages long. And, like, not even, like, of a, like, crazy amount of content, 8 pages. It's, hold on, someone's saying supposedly Ruby's ending next week. I'm about to flip my goddamn shit all over this podcast, Nick. I swear to God!
So let's recap here. If this really is the case that Ruby is ending next week, let's go over this real quick. We started off with, like, the first 60% of this whole run was just recreating the trailers for the characters.
Oh, it was longer than that. This isn't going to be 14 chapters, or this is going to be 14 chapters long. It was chapter 10, we were still in the gang flashback. So, yeah,
God. So, almost 75% of this has been character trailer recreations, which really were very disconnected. And then in the last 4 chapters, we get, by the way, this is Team Juniper. By the way, this is the villain of the series. By the way, there's monsters. They're grim and they fight them. And this one is possessing these snakes to turn them into a hydra. And I think we've done a good job of introducing you to these characters. So now you understand that Yang is upset about when her hair gets messed up.
and now you know the rest of the story.
Did Ruby's character trailer thing touch on her obsession with weapons at all?
No, her character trailer is the one that features the absolute least.
Because they bring that up. There's a joke about that because they're like, yeah, apparently there is this beautiful sword within the snake or something. And Ruby's like, really? A rare weapon? And it's like, if you did not watch Ruby, you would have no idea. They established it in like the first episode of the series.
Yeah.
I remember that. She is obsessed with weapons. And getting to see cool new weapons and stuff, and she's really proud of her scythe sniper rifle thing because she designed it herself somehow.
To be fair, I decided, I was like, I remember the first chapter being kind of weird, and they do actually note in the first chapter that, like, at one point, fucking Snowcheck, whatever her name is, says, I'm not a weapons maniac like you. So there's an offhand comment that's meant to address this. I just read the first chapter again, knowing that it was like half of it was a fucking Ruby fighting like anonymous wolves, and then the end of it is Jean getting thrown into a table by a bunch of bullies that was never addressed again! What is this series? Alright, I really quickly need to address the 8 pages of content that we were given this week. Wherein Team Ruby fights a fucking snake and ends in a battle pose, having not fought the snake because it's 8 pages! Is this shit literally ending after 14 pages or 14 chapters?
I mean, we specifically dedicated a bonus episode to checking out a chunk of the series so that we could be more familiar with it. And after reading through this manga, I now have to ask, and for what?
Like, what was the what? I honestly can't understand.
Who is this manga for?
Like, if you're a Ruby fan, you're like, I got almost nothing new out of this. I heard, again, I haven't seen volume 2. Supposedly this has some connection. Like, it's a very small one, I understand, but there is something that this bridges into season volume 2 that I guess wasn't answered before. So I guess you have that. But again, 75% of the series, more than that, was devoted to just redoing the character volumes, the character trailers, which at that point it's like, was there not more of an original story to develop in this? Like, I feel like you could have done this, like, just saying, like, all right, we'll just assume that everybody knows who these characters are, or if you had to, do the little intro things as one chapter a piece, because there definitely was not so much in those that you had to expand, like, you know, Yang's fucking character trailer into 3 different ones. Like, hold on, we need to really touch on the relationship with Junior, because you're going to see him a lot. He's on the cover page, guys.
Apparently, it's actually done in Japan.
Yeah.
Like, it is absolutely, it is 100% complete. It's finished. It's done. This is like, okay. This makes a little more sense.
Okay.
Okay, hang on. So, well, not as much. Well, not very much still.
Right, you're breaking my
so
heart.
Apparently, this is because we've been getting these chapters weekly. Apparently, they were released monthly in Ultra Jump over in Japan, starting in November of 2015. So they basically just finished in January, I guess.
Wait, where was Ruby in 2015, though? Was that
in 2015? They would have been, I think, around season 2.
So what was the plan for this? Were they did they make this?
Especially because these most recent several chapters with them finding the Hydra are supposedly set between volumes 1 and 2. Now, if you had launched this manga series with the intent of let's reintroduce these characters to a new audience, and then also there is a bit of a hype up for what we're going to do next with the series, I would totally get that. Mm. But God, it is so, it's so hard to wrap my mind around.
I honestly just don't, and again, I want to stress, because I know there are people who are big fans of Ruby, I'm not shitting on Ruby, like, by and large here. I'm commenting on the fact that this manga is a tremendous waste of time. This was 8 pages of okay art of them fighting a random Hydra that they haven't beaten at the end, but they're going to go into their fucking super cool team pose at the end. And credits. It's like, this wasn't a chapter. Why still don't know what's... Why was Gene getting beaten up by that bully? I know, he's a fucking dork. He's the Milhouse of the series. But context, why?
The final chapter was published in the February 2017 issue of Ultra Jump in January with a teaser about a second volume.
I swear to God. Don't do this to me, Japan.
I mean, it's like, okay, look, I don't have a problem with something getting, a manga spinoff or a manga tie-in. It's just so weird that you would take this approach to it because, like I've said multiple times with this, I don't know who this is really meant to be for. Is it just for fans of Ruby to collect? In which case, why are you retelling the trailers of all things?
Like, it's not enough of a new adaptation, but at the same time, it's not enough of like a new medium presenting the story we already know. Like, I've read things like Kingdom Hearts manga or, other series that are basically retellings of something that's already been told before, but in a manga format. But this is 10 chapters of the character trailers, which don't really give you that much of an insight into the Ruby universe. It just gives you enough to kind of understand the 4 titular characters. And it's 3, like, fucking chapters of a bunch of people you don't know finding some snakes, and then Team Ruby shows up, and then apparently credits next week, so.
Gilly Elfson brings up a valid point. The first series that we covered that's going to end in 2017 is going to be Ruby. And we're going to have to make a note of that.
Oh, man.
All right. I mean, let's move on. Let's finish things up. That was Ruby. It was a super eventful chapter, like always, guys.
That's just 8 pages, man. Come on.
One Piece. Oh, man.
I stopped talking about One Punch Man for this exact reason.
At least One Punch Man's chapters got longer.
Yeah, that's the thing. One Punch Man got better.
One Punch Man, chapter 854. What are you doing?
It's in One Punch Man.
Are we still not talking about Ruby? It sounds like we're talking about Ruby. I like that Zoro and Chopper are on a chopper.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So, this chapter is a lot more of the Straw Hats running around as chaos unfolds in Big Mom's headquarters. We begin with Jinbei running around while Nami just kind of rides around on his... I think that she's sitting on his cloak.
She's on his back. Mm-hmm. She's kind of like resting on the swell of his back, I guess you'd call it.
I think that she's like on her knees.
Yeah, she is. It's a little tough to tell because she's in like super baggy pants right now, but yeah.
Right, which blend into the bagginess of Jinbei's cloak.
Oh, yeah.
So they're running around, trying to get away from guards. They're end up kind of, it looks like getting set in a pincer. And so Jinbei's rushing towards the enemies behind them, and Nami's like, oh, hang on, there's them behind us too. And she summoned this lightning cloud to zap them, and she accidentally hits Chopper as well. And Garrett's like, oh, we're here to rescue you.
Yeah. My
so more of the Straw Hats meeting up. More of the Straw Hats meeting up as Jinbei and Nami are also drawn into the mirror world. What's her name? Brulé, yeah. Has regained consciousness, and so she's, you know, upset with Jinbei. He's like, this is a betrayal! Not only did you want to leave our operation, but you cowered in the face of the roulette wheel. And Jinbei says, yes, you know, Mama gave Fishman Island her protection. I wanted to repay her with honor, but I sensed only death and malice from that wheel. And Pedro, of course, is there, and he's like, ah, the roulette wheel. Yes, you made the correct choice not to spin it, Jinbei. 5 years ago, my partner spun that wheel. He sought salvation and lost his life instead. It is constructed such that whoever spins it is guaranteed to die. And Brother's like, oh, yeah! Duh. She makes a good point, which is, well, yeah, no one, Mama would never let anyone actually leave her realm. Whether they are mere trespassers or faithful pirates employing her service, she welcomes all comers and kills all leavers. Yeah. That makes sense, I guess.
It does, and it fits in with what we've kind of started to discover about Mom. But it's nice to see that.
She puts on the welcoming kind of air when people are getting along with her, and then turns very, very terrifying if they don't. Mm.
Or that she really has no intention of working with other people. She really just wants what she wants.
She's a bastard, yeah.
No, Nick, her children are bastards.
Oh, because she sleeps around, because she likes to have her family be of different species.
There you go.
Because she's weird.
She wants them all to sit at the same table, Nick, and make giant people. It's heartwarming.
But if they were all giant, then never mind. We cut over to Big Mom. Prometheus, her son, is putting this big old cartoony Band-Aid on his cheek. And she's like, oh, what's the matter? And he says, I get the wound I got from the Soul King is actually really hurts. And so Big Mom says, oh, I'll choose to compliment him rather than scold you for weakness. It's the first time any of you have been hurt. Which, I guess says a lot for, Brooke's abilities then.
I think this actually might be more than even we're insinuating here. That the Prometheus is like, ow, this wound is deeper than I thought. It just started hurting again. I wonder if this is the powers of Brooke we haven't seen yet in a full display.
Maybe this will be his way of escaping somehow.
I feel like there's definitely something going on here, because I feel like we're due for something big from Brooke here. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised this plays into that.
Mom is, of course, being planned on putting Brooke away for a while. And, you know, but I'd rather carry him around with me for a while than put him in the book, she says. She then starts talking with Pudding, whose cover with Brooke is basically blown, as they start going over the plans for the wedding to kill the Vinsmokes. And Brooke is, of course, shocked to be hearing all of this. I think that he is basically playing dead at this point, because he's not talking about anything, and it would be easier for him to play a being unconscious, you know, having no face or eyes, to have to put in the right, you know, hold shut. Pudding, you know, goes over what she did with Reiju, and so Mom's like, oh, you didn't kill her, did you? He's like, oh, come on, no, I just shot her in the leg and then erased her memories. You know me better than that. And Big Mom kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Whatever. She says, like, oh, you know, well, you have to be careful, and I don't want you to come back at you and cause a disaster. Pudding's like, oh, you know, I got to test the gun's power, though. Look on the bright side, you know, and he even the Germa's augmented humans don't stand a chance against this. And Mom has a monologue where she describes what they're going to do.
Everyone will have their eyes on the wedding kiss. That slackjaw dope, Sanji, will lift your veil and lean for the kiss. And for the first time, he'll see your third eye. He'll falter for a moment. That's your cue. You get one shot. Finish him off with it. Aim right between his eyes. His brains will fly. The entire audience will freeze with shock.
And a very graphic silhouette shown of, yes, Sanji getting his brains blown out through the back of his skull.
It's shocking that in a week where a person was literally exploded from, like, head to torso, this still was in competition for, like, the most grim visual in Jump this week.
Yeah. And she describes essentially, like, the Red Wedding. You know, we'll all take out our guns. The unarmed Vince Smokes will turn around and see a wall of gun barrels. Germa's blood will spill. A giant pond of blood spreading across the ground. The six mutilated Vince Smoke corpses. Then the sounds will turn into a gun salute. That's when the real party begins. We'll celebrate with cake. We'll toast with tea. Once their annoying leadership is gone, all the rest of Germa will belong to me.
Dun,
oh, it's a villain.
Dun, 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 dun. Although we know this already.
Yeah. So to come down from that terrifying image, we find out that Sanji's escape has been covered by a guard who got sleepy and just decided to sleep in his bed. He's just like, oh no, I fell asleep in Master Sanji's bed. I guess he's not back, right? Oh, well, might as well get some more sleep. I better return to my post before I get caught, but oh, well, better get some more sleep.
Get the fuck up, more wings.
Then we go into a meeting room elsewhere where a bunch of Big Mom's, you know, men are, and her family are talking. And Tamago is there, and he's still in his chicken form. It's like, it was like, oh, Soul King is currently inside of Mama's possession, and Pedro was in the third floor courtyard when he blew himself up. Is that correct, Count?
Indubitably. Indubitably. Intubtly. Yeah, you got so it, wait. Chief. But she even gives
so
up
the way
on
that
it.
They see things, they believe that, okay, well, there's still the rabbit and raccoon dog, and we had a report from Sister Belay that she caught them earlier today. So that eliminates four of the six. The problems are these two, who beat Brother Cracker and escaped the seducing woods. Well, but we locked them up, safe and sound in the underground prison library. But why are there, you know, rumors going around that they escaped? And they, you know, turn over to look at, oh fuck, I've forgotten his name. I named him MVP one week. I should remember his name. it's in Montdor, I think?
Call him Sloppy Joe.
Sloppy Joe. It's a Sloppy Joe.
It looks like a Sloppy Joe to me.
I guess. Hang on a sec. I'll have it in just a second.
Opera? Somebody's saying opera.
Opera. Yes, it is opera. He's like, oh no, don't make me repeat myself. There's completely groundless. No reports at all they've escaped. There's nobody down in the basement. I was working hard to torture him and get Lola's location out of him, like Mama told me. They didn't know nothing, so I had him burned to death. And was it overboard? Yeah, maybe. You don't know what your older brothers were, do you?
I can just in the background constantly. Sorry, tonight. I just every so often I have to pecaw like a chicken as loudly as I can.
This week's MVP is Baron Tamaka.
It's every so often, like Mama's in the middle of her big speech, she's like, and all the rest of Germany will belong to pecaw!
God damn it, Baron Tamaka, I'm sorry.
Me, pecaw! God.
All right. Oh, fuck. So, yeah, Opera's just thinking to himself, there's no way that I can admit that I screwed up that much because Mama will have me killed. So Montdor is like, all right, well, we'll cross them off, too. And so that just leaves Sanji and the Vinsmokes, and they're all confined to their rooms. All right,
everything's taken care of. Let's all enjoy the festivities tomorrow. Let's make the best wedding ever for our sweet little sister pudding. So essentially it seems as though things are looking up for the Straw Hats, if only because the leadership of Big Mom's crew have no idea what's going on and have to provide them with a valuable opening. We then catch up with Sanji, who is just kind of huddled up by himself in the middle of a hallway in the chateau. There's like, he's still got the picnic basket with him with all the stuff he was going to bring pudding. And, he's like, all right, God, Sanji. I ended up just making all of their favorites because I was so used to making the Straw Hats favorites. And he's approached by a guard who's got this weird face veil, on with his hat that does not fit his face at all.
Now I know what he reminds me of. He reminds me of the mayor from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, with the big old...
The giant grin.
Yeah, the crescent moon grin, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I was like, I know he reminds me of somebody.
So.
Mayor Fat Chops, I think they called him. I played Kingdom Hearts, you know I'm right.
So, the guard is like, oh, look, a picnic basket. Food! Wait a minute, Vince McSanji, I thought you were supposed to be sleeping. Oh, well. And Sanji sees that he's got the big chunk of meat in his hand, and he remembers Luffy's promise, you know, if you don't come back, I'll just sit here and starve. And so Sanji says, that meat there doesn't belong to you! And big old roundhouse kick knocks the guy into the wall. And he takes the meat as it flies up into the air, and catches it casually in his palm, puts it back in the picnic basket, and of course, more guards have been alerted to the noise that he's just made. So he realizes what he's done, he grabs the picnic basket, and he runs off as the guards are shouting for him to stop.
Sorry, I got distracted because I searched Mayor Fat Chops.
Mayor Fat Chops.
And I got an article from the fucking, what is this, the Pittsburgh Clay Potting Company? Oh, sorry. The National Glass Budget from 1913 that has like an entire joke article about someone, an assessor glaring at Mr. Fat Chops, the well-known manager of World of Big Money. It's like, don't you belong to Fat Chops Realty Association? No, I'm just a small-time banker. Oh, what about your country home in Virginia? Well, that belongs to the Fat Chops Country Life Corporation.
And of course, there is suddenly a spike in Google searches for Mayor Fat Chops. Oh, wow. This was definitely written in 1913, wasn't it? Which has just elected an N-word mayor.
Oh, no. All right. Times were different back then.
Yes, very much. A nice little chapter of One Piece. Nice to see Sanji finally just getting his act together and going back to see Luffy. It really feels as though they're not going to be on Whole Cake Island for too much longer at this point. I feel like, okay, I give this like a couple more months at most, because I really don't see how this could get prolonged for much further.
It definitely has sort of built itself to that point. I think we're going to... I'm surprised because I thought this was going to be Sanji trying to figure things out on his own, but I think this is him definitely coming to bring that food to Luffy, and I guess with Luffy's help, he'll storm into this, and the other Straw Hats will kind of come in. Right now, it's just kind of figuring out how all the pieces fit together. Like, that's why I'm saying, like, something has to be going on with Brook, because he's the only Straw Hat, basically, right now that's completely on his own, and
right.
It's such a precarious placement. I have to figure he has some way out of this or something huge to do, because there's, you know, I can't just imagine they're going to be like, oh shit, we're all ready to go, but none of us know where Brook is. Let's go find him real quick at Big Mom's, you know, powers or something like that.
I wonder if the wedding will be their chance of rescuing him, since Big Mom is going to just be carrying him around on her person.
Or if maybe, like, she just throws his, like, skeleton somewhere and, like, he's used his soul to escape, because I don't think she knows about his power yet. She just knows he's some kind of skeleton.
Right.
So, I don't know. We'll definitely see. But I'm pretty excited.
Right. That is going to do it for this week, a weekly manga recap. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you next week, the day after Valentine's Day. In the meantime, though, we're going to name our weekly MVPs and favorite series. Good pickings to go through this week, honestly. We had a little bit of a down week last week, but things really ramped up this time around. I don't know. What do you have?
Man, I have my character of the week. I guess chapter of the week I'm going to give to... I think I'm going to give it. I'm going to give it to, I think, My Hero this week.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. Almost any chapter here could be really good. I kind of wanted to give it to We Never Learn. But I think I'm just going to go with the fact that this was like a chapter of My Hero that kind of just stunned me. Like, it was a chapter that after I read it, I kind of had to stop for a moment, be like, holy shit, this just happened.
Jesus,
like, this,
Christ.
This is a pretty tense chapter of this stuff. So I'm giving it to that. But seriously, any chapter this week, I think, could have won it. Except for Ruby.
Right. I mean, it was a really good week. Black Clover had a chapter that I liked for once. Food Wars had the interesting thing that they gave Takumi a spotlight. One Piece was eventful like it always is. My Hero Academia was crazy, and Promised Neverland really amped things up. I am also going to give it to My Hero Academia, though, in terms of just the chapter of as a whole. It really was probably the most shocking and the best from start to finish. With Overhaul's big speech, and then his actions at the end. And My Hero Academia has also won the audience poll, but not by much. Promise Neverland was close behind it.
Yeah, it's literally only a couple votes that separate the two of them. So,
MVP, I am going to give to Isabella.
Okay.
I mean, God, lots of characters really stood out this week. Overhaul, of course. Ladros with his big asshole thing going on. Takumi had the standout moment, and Sanji making the realization at the end. But I gotta give it to Mom because, as you know, that chapter was all about her, and she really carried it.
No, I can completely see that, and she's definitely a competitor. Overhaul, I'm seeing a lot. I'm actually gonna give mine though to Aldini. Because this is the first time I've felt like I actually care about him as a character. I know some people are saying it's forced, but hey, I don't care if it's forced so long as it gives
me a reason. You gotta start somewhere.
Yeah,
you
know? Like, he's already kind of working from behind, and, you know, now that I'm able to say to myself, like, ooh, I'm excited to see what this kid does. I'm excited to see him motivate someone. I like that they've taken this stupid little goofy contest, and he's basically said, like, hey, someone, what are you doing joking around? This is still the kitchen. This is still our battleground. We're on opposite sides here, so
don't
compete.
Yeah, don't take me lightly just because this is practice.
So I really liked it from him, but as mentioned, this was a really good week for a lot of people.
Well, it also matches the first confrontation that they had, because they had a test that was done in like their first class together, and they basically got the teacher to agree to judge their dishes against each other when they did not have to do that. Because they're just so competitive. So the fact that he's like, yeah, you know, any chance, any time where we're cooking against each other, that's kind of a big competition you should take seriously. Mm-hmm. So. All right. Well, let's wrap things up then. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Weekly Manga Recap. We record the show on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, usually, although sometimes we do need to change things up. So you can follow us on social media to stay updated. Follow the show at WMR Podcast and your host at Y Roller of Time and at Rolo T. And we'll let you know when we're going to begin the show right here on hitbox.tv/RoloT and twitch.tv/RoloT. You can also check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com as well as on iTunes and on YouTube. And if you do on those latter two, make sure that you subscribe and leave a comment and rating so that we can beat the woodworkers.
I need it. Every day, guys. It's
need
every
that fix.
Every it's, God, you guys got any more of them iTunes reviews? I need just a little pick me up to get me into next week. That's all.
Mm-hmm. If you want to ask us a question or suggest a manga for us to check out, or even just provide general feedback, you can send that stuff to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. We also want to thank our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy. Patreon.com/weeklymangarecap. Check it out.
Special thanks to Joel Phillips and Marshawn Williams, who are our newest patrons. Thank you very much, both of you. Brewfist is greatly, greatly appreciated.
And, of course, thank you to the guys who help make our show what it is. Infamous Planet and Steve Mann. You can check out Steve Mann's artwork in a bunch of different places. He has the Weekly Manga Recap title cards for free available on his Patreon account. And if you feel like looking at some boobs, he does that if you become a patron of his. So,
which is worth it, guys. If you want, if animated titties is your thing, you're doing yourself a disservice to not be subscribed. That's all I'm saying.
And that's going to do it.
Yeah. I think next week, guys, we're going to be doing Pokemon Adventures, Ruby and Sapphire. Which means we'll be announcing what the next recommendation is. Do we want to say right now it's going to be, I think, one of the series we're going to be adding to the recap then?
Yeah. At the very least one. At the very least, we're going to try out the way that we did with Astra. But I think that, yeah.
So, yeah, I think next week we'll be also announcing one of those. But otherwise, yeah, guys, definitely check in next week when we'll have that on. And mm-hmm. I teased out a little bit on Twitter. I may be working on a new World Trigger to My Heart and Back Door. So maybe we'll have a special guest on to help us get that across. Who knows? But I also tweeted out, though, that I realized that the two of us, I feel like, could very convincingly be Weevil Underwood and Rex Raptor. Until I realized that I'd be the Rex Raptor, and Rex Raptor always lost. That he wasn't even considered to be a good duelist when people fought him. Like, at least Weevil was, like, considered to be the better of the two of them.
If I recall correctly, his Duelist Kingdom deck had, like, one Speller Trap card in the entire thing.
It's pretty bad. He wasn't good. But then he didn't even get, like, a follow-up duel. I guess, did he have, like, a duel at some point during the Orichalcos arc? Well,
He got a power up during the Orichalcos arc, yes.
So I put good cards in his deck.
Even then he was kind of a little bit of an afterthought because Weevil really. Everyone remembers Weevil's duel in the Orichalcos arc because that's when you get Berserker Soul and you could go and Doro Doro because he just beats the shit out of him over and over again. But Rex doesn't really get that. He just kind of lost.
He loses in that one too.
He loses every duel in the series, even that first one that he's in.
I know, he loses every duel, but, like, at least, like, he even was a loser in his introduction. He was the one who lost to Weevil in that tournament.
He loses introduction, he loses to Mai when she plays him with, like, his room on the line. I think that he might... Maybe he beats someone off-screen before Joey beat him, but I don't think that he does. And then in Battle City, you don't even get to see him duel. You just know that Esperoba beat him off screen.
What shitty card did Esperoba take from him? That's what I want to know. Like, what was he like? No, my best card, Crawling Dragon number 2.
I think he took Serpent Knight Dragon.
Sure. Oh, what a fuck! I'm so sad. Like, cause I'm playing the shit out Yu-Gi-Oh game. Which I feel like you have to get so we can duel with each other. But I'm just like, oh, I'd be like the Rex Raptor in this scenario. So I was like, oh, but Rex Raptor's so lame. He's so bullshit. Why is this guy a character?
Bye, everyone.
Fucking Rebecca Hawkins is more well-respected. Duke Devlin, take Rex Raptor out of this game and give Tristan his own deck because this is shameful shit right here. Disgraceful.